you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho,
starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And it's Friday!
It's
the remedy for boredom is here. The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. 2, 3, 4. Somebody gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody gonna get their wig split. Somebody gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody gonna get their wig split. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Break his neck. All right! Such a huge hit, me reading Mark Henry's lyrics. Apparently, you guys loved it. I won a couple awards for that in Luxembourg. Today, what a show we have. Rey Mysterio will be flying through the studio. He'll be here talking to us about all the amazing things he's done throughout his career. I have a long-time friendship with Rey. Met him in 93 when I think he was like 18 years old or something like that. I didn't believe that he was 18. He looked like he was about 10. He looked like Scooter from the Muppets or Sherman from Sherman and Mr. Peabody. He looked like a little kid. And it's great to have him on the show. I've been waiting for a long time. He's been my friend for basically my entire wrestling career, over 20 years. Got a lot of great stories to tell. And also Rey will be in the huge Andre the Giant Battle Royal that is coming up at WrestleMania, which is this Sunday.
WrestleMania will be here along with Roddy James Dio.
I always love that when you said, for some reason, when I was a kid, it'd be like, you know,
the World Tractor Races, Sunday. This Sunday, the Gravedigger will be there. And after the show, a special set by Roddy James Dio.
New Dio tribute record out right now called This Is Your Life, which has an amazing version of Last in Line by Tenacious D, Neon Knights by Anthrax, and Ronnie's Rising medley, which is Tarot Woman, A Light in the Black, Kill the King, Stargazer by Metallica. And have you heard Metallica's new song, Lords of Summer? Check it out online right now if you haven't, or check out Ronnie's Rising medley. Both are amazing tunes. Metallica in the studio right now working on a new record, and I will have Lars Ulrich on this show by hook or by crook when that record is ready to go. Lars said he would do it when the record is ready. And I'm like, what is that? Like, you know, 2020? Is that when we're going to be ready? So this Sunday, WrestleMania is coming up. I will not be there. I will not be a surprise entrant in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. People are like, oh, we're sure you're going to be there. No, my ego is far too big for that. If I was coming back for WrestleMania, it'd be for a huge spot, not for a Battle Royal. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm not going to, I wouldn't come back for that. So just so you know, but I will be watching the show. Very excited about some of the matches. I think it's going to be very cool. A lot of you heard the other day, the last week's show with Howie Mandel, which if you haven't heard it, go check it out. It's a great interview. Once again, it doesn't matter who's on this show. If I have them on, you have to trust me that I think you're going to like the guests because I don't have boring people on my show. So whether you like music, whether you like wrestling, whether you like acting or whatever it is, whatever reason why you listen to Talk Is Jericho, and I know there's hundreds of podcasts for you to listen to, I appreciate you being here to join me for this one. If there's a guest on there, trust me that you're going to like them. On Howie Mandel's show last week, I told you about the BTWF, the Big Time Wrestling Federation, my wrestling company that I had when I was a kid, and how the main event of Pummel Mania 2, which was our big show, where I was up on the ladder. Eastern Crowbar was the name of the big babyface hero, was up on the ladder. And just before I could jump off to beat the Wild Warden, we were interrupted by the high school janitor, Egypt. And we called him Egypt because no one could really understand what he was talking about. I'm not saying he was actually from Egypt. That was just his nickname. And then when I had that show on, I mentioned that Egypt kind of spoiled things. There was a lot of bad press for Egypt. And Egypt's representatives actually called us and asked to be on the show. And I thought, you know, it's only fair to have Egypt on the show. So he's with us right here live in the studio. Egypt, welcome to the studio.
Jericho, I came straight here from the streets of San Francisco. And I'm happy to be on your show.
Yeah, Egypt, but you and I have a lot of issues against each other. I mean, you really did spoil the main event of Pummel Mania 2, and I really am not over that, and I'm not really... I mean, why did you have to get involved, you jerk?
Because you were a high school student. Instead of studying or doing your work, you were too busy wrestling. And the liabilities could have been huge. So on behalf of the school, I had to stop you from jumping off the ladder. And for the last 30 years or so, I have been regretting my decision.
Well, you should be regretting your decision, Egypt, because you spoiled a great match, and Pummel Mania 2 goes down in the books as a no contest. Disappointing, a lot of fans, and the whole legacy of the BTWF. But, you know, I appreciate the fact you're here on the show today. Would you like to, you know, as a sign of solidarity, join me with in your WrestleMania predictions?
Well, thank you. I'm very excited about the WrestleMania. I'll be watching it on the streets of San Francisco through a picture window at the TV inside the sports bar.
All right. Okay. So you're going to be watching. You know what's going on. So let's start. We'll go from, so pre-show tag title match, the Usos versus Ryback and Curtis Axel versus the Real Americans, Jack Swagger and Cesaro versus Los Matadors. I'm going to say that the Real Americans, Jack Swagger and Cesaro are going to win that match. What do you think, Egypt?
It could go either way. It's a toss-up, but I'll go with the Matadors, because I like bull riding.
Okay, so that's Cesaro and Swagger for Jericho, Los Matadors for Egypt. For those of you keeping track at home, make a little scoreboard, and let's see who wins. Okay, so Hulk Hogan's guest host in the pay-per-view.
Hold on 1 second.
Yes, you have a comment about Hulk Hogan, Egypt?
Yes, I think that Hulk Hogan will do some sort of stare down with Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, so you think that Hogan and Piper will kind of have a little stare down to get in the ring, kind of a homage back to the very first WrestleMania main event?
Yes, I do. And I also think that Paul Orndorff and Mr. T will be involved somehow.
Okay, so Egypt is now predicting that Hogan, Piper, Mr. T, and Orndorff will do some kind of a shtick. Okay, next we have the Divas title match. AJ Lee defending against every diva on the roster. I'm not going to read the names because probably reading their names will be longer than the actual match itself. What the hell? I'm going to go with AJ Lee, make her the champ. Egypt, your thoughts?
I am going to choose Rosa Mendez.
Any reason for that?
Because we haven't seen her in a while and she will be coming back. I predict she will have a mohawk and be completely bald instead of that, and she will do the Rose Warriors.
Oh, you think she's going to be the Rose Warrior? Kind of a takeoff on the Road Warrior?
Yes.
All right, Egypt has predicted Rosa Mendez. I'm predicting AJ Lee. Kane and the New Age Outlaws versus The Shield in a six-man tag match. I mean, The Shield is obviously going to win, and I'll say that Reigns pins Kane.
Well, then aren't you just the stinky face? If you're so sure who's going to win this match, why don't you just go marry them? I'm glad I stopped you from jumping off the ladder on the Pearl Mania main event, you stupid son of a bastard. But I am going to say that the Shield will break up and the winners will be Kane and the New Age Outlaws.
Okay, so and first of all, watch your tone, Egypt. You don't have to get so angry. We've got a lot of issues. We don't have to solve those on air. So I'm taking the Shield, and Egypt is taking Kane and the New Age Outlaws. John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. I mean, I'm going to say that it'd be great to see Bray Wyatt win. I think Bray Wyatt will win.
Ah, you stupid bastard once again. John Cena is the hero to the kids and to all the janitors everywhere, all the janitors I know on the streets of San Francisco. Love John Cena, so I'll choose John Cena.
All right, so I've got Wyatt, and Egypt has John Cena. Streak match, Undertaker. I mean, obviously, Undertaker will never lose for the streak. I'm taking Undertaker. How about you, Egypt?
I think the Brock Lesnar is too strong to be beaten. So I'm going to choose Brock Lesnar with the Paul Heyman as his sports advisor.
Okay, so you're taking Brock. I'm taking Undertaker. Daniel Bryan versus Triple H. I think Daniel Bryan will beat Triple H clean. Egypt.
I also agree with you that Daniel Bryan will win, but it will be by disqualification. Triple H will get himself disqualified, and Daniel Bryan will move forward by proxy.
That's a good word for a man such as yourself, Egypt, proxy. So we're both saying Daniel Bryan, I say by clean victory, and Egypt says by DQ, which would lead to the triple threat match of Randy Orton versus Batista versus Daniel Bryan. I mean, obviously, I think this is Daniel Bryan's moment. Daniel Bryan is finally going to get the chance to win, stand in the center of the ring, and have, you know, the entire crowd chant yes and give people what they want. Egypt, what do you think?
I think it's going to be a swerve. I think Batista will walk out of the ring as the champion. And I think that they will have another match next month for Batista versus Daniel Bryan to see who the winner will be.
All right, Egypt. So a little controversial there. I'm taking Daniel Bryan and you're taking Batista. One last match we forgot was the Andre the Giant Memorial 30-man Battle Royal. So many amazing guys in this match. I'm going to say, just judging by the star power, I mean, Big Show is the easy victory. He's the one that the you know, be easy to go with him. But let's go with somebody new. I'm going to say they're going to give Dolph Ziggler the victory and have him kind of fire up again and get a new push and a new lease on life. So I will say Big Show is the go-to guy, but Dolph Ziggler is kind of the dark horse. What do you think, Egypt?
Well, just looking over the roster, I think that I would like to see Rey Mysterio win the Battle Royal. He won the world title at WrestleMania 24 in San Francisco. So I think he should win to get him back on the map. And if he doesn't win, when someone is about to, I will go into the ring and stop the match just like I did at Pummel Mania 2 to make sure that whoever I want to win wins, because I will not be denied my rightful place in the history of pro wrestling.
All right, Egypt, you're getting out of control. I appreciate your predictions. You never really apologized for interrupting Pummel Mania 2. I should not have had you on this show. And believe me, there will be repercussions. And we have talked to Jack Tunney, the president of the BTWF. to find out what kind of legal actions that myself and Wallace can take on Egypt for interrupting the Pummelmania match, even though it was 26 years ago. The statute of limitations has not run out, and we will get our revenge, and there will be a rematch, Eastern Crowbar and the Wild Warden, to figure out who is the final actual winner of the Pummelmania 2 main event. All right. We've got Rey Mysterio on the show today. Going to be taking your phone calls also a little later on, so keep your eye on the Twitter. Ah, the phone number will be posted at Talk is Jericho. When you see the number, call me, and I will answer your question.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
On the line right now, one of my oldest friends in the business, Rey Mysterio, is here. How you doing,
come
man?
On, I ain't that old. Come on, Chris.
you started when you were 12. That's why.
Yeah, no, that's probably the age. You probably met me like 2 years after I started.
You know, it's funny. The first time I ever met you, and we're just jumping right in here, was in a hotel room in Mexico City, and you came in with Art Barr, who was Love Machine. And
yeah, I remember.
Do you remember that?
Reading your book about that. I remember reading your book about it, and when I read it, I remembered the story. But please go ahead
well, you came in there, and Art came in there, and he's like, "Yes, my friend Oscar, he's a wrestler too." And I was looking, I was like, "This guy's got to be 12 years old. Like, look at this kid. He looks like a Muppet or something." And then Art, he's swearing and he's lighting up a joint, and I'm like, "What are you doing? We're gonna get thrown in jail. You can't bring this kid here." And he's like,
"That's
no,
crazy.
He's a wrestler." And I was, and you're like, "Yeah, hopefully we can wrestle someday." I'm like, "Whatever, kid." As if.
and that shortly after that, it was probably like 4 years later when we hit it off when we met again in Japan, probably, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was a few years before that, few years after that when we met up in WAR in Japan. But man, yeah. I haven't. How you doing, man? I haven't talked to you in such a long time.
It's been a minute, man. I've been doing great. This knee has been giving me issues in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a chance now to sit down and watch a couple of videos of. Especially with the WWE Network,
mm-hmm.
Man, I was able to go back and see some of the matches I had with Psychosis and ECW, and even like my first two matches with WCW, and just going back and watching just a few of those matches. I remember sitting down with my son with Dominic and tell him, I said, "You see all those falls that I was taking on my knees?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "That led up to so many surgeries in the past, man."
Yeah.
Said, which is giving me issues now. So,
how many surgeries have you had now?
Total.
How many? 12?
Seven.
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 Yeah.
Seven. But I'd say within those seven, this is just seven on the knee. Not including the three that I had on my bicep, which realistically, I mean, that's probably the only two issues that I've had in the 25 years that I've been wrestling, just my knee and my right arm.
Well, that's one of those things. I mean, you mentioned talking to your son about how you would land on your knees and all that sort of thing. I mean, you were by far, I mean, you know, kind of jumping around a bit, but not just a pioneer in high flying, but to me, it's still... For all the years I've been in the business and all the guys that I've seen all around the world, you are still the best high flyer I've ever seen in my life. And you did,
thank you, Chris.
So many things that I've never seen before and never seen since. And being your size, I mean, you're a smaller guy for the wrestling business. That must have been a lot of wear and tear on you, especially in the early years when guys probably threw you around and you were jumping all over the place. I mean, no wonder your knees are kind of rebelling now. I mean, you've had a lot of amazing matches with amazing moves that you, like you said, your body was taking the pounding on those.
And it's crazy to even mention the fact that, because I didn't hear this in ECW, The fact that you would get guys in the locker room telling you to slow down,
mm-hmm.
you didn't need to do as much. ECW, I've never heard that. You
right.
know, when I was there for a year and a half, 2 years almost. But later on, I did get a lot of guys in WCW, you know, telling me to slow down, and I just didn't know. It wasn't part of my nature to
mm-hmm.
to slow down or to execute only two moves and not 15 in a match. You know, I just didn't
yeah.
know how to take that. So you know, now I see the consequences, which I don't regret at all. You know, I mean, if I would have eliminated a certain amount of moves in a match, I probably wouldn't have got as far as I did from now. You know,
no, because you're small. I mean, let's be honest. In the world of wrestling, you're a small guy, and that's how you stood out because you were so incredibly talented with all the different things you did. Like, we used to call you a real life superhero. You reminded me of, like, you and Jackie Chan were like real life superheroes that you could do things that like normal human beings couldn't do. You know, when did you start, you know, realizing that you could do these sort of things? Like, what led you to want to become a wrestler when you were a kid in the first place? I mean, obviously you knew that you were smaller than wrestlers normally were.
I tell you what, I lived in San Diego from the age from birth up
mm-hmm.
until the age about 11 years old.
Right.
And within that time, my uncle Rey Mysterio lived in my mom's house for a couple years when he was working for construction,
mm-hmm.
but was wrestling in Tijuana every Friday night.
Okay.
So him living in my house, I had a chance to experience wrestling for the first time. Not only that, go to every match that he had, you know, and
yeah.
on and see what wrestling was like, man. See the masks, see the colors, see the outfits. You know, I don't know if this happened with you, but as soon as I saw all of that for the first time, I was like, man, this is a cool world. I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
You know, And as I grew older, I was able to accompany my uncle to the gym, be part of not the wrestling school at the time, but just going in there just like any other kid would if they let him have 5 or 10 minutes of the ring.
Yeah.
You know, just play around, pretend like you were wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Until I took it serious. And that was probably about after the age of 11 is when we moved down to Tijuana. And I was able to go to the gym every day. I mean, Monday through Thursday, and Fridays would be wrestling. Saturdays would be just hanging out. And then Sundays would be wrestling again, you know, until I was able to wrestle professionally, which was at the age of 14.
You started at 14.
It's crazy, and here's a crazy story, Chris. I don't know if you know this, but they said, okay, let's say you take a test, because we had to take a test back then,
mm-hmm.
and let's say you pass the test. Once you pass the test, you go to the Boxing Commission and Wrestling Commission of Tijuana, and then they give you your wrestling license, which I still have. So you got to check out
the
picture on that.
So what kind of a test did you have to take, like a written test?
No. This was a pretty much like a test, like a physical condition.
Oh, gotcha.
Test.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the three or four things that you had to go through. Yeah.
I gotcha.
The last one would be, of course, having a match in front of the Wrestling Commission, which
yep.
at the time were other wrestlers, professionals.
You had to have a match in front of the commission?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Exactly.
So when, yeah. were you like a gymnast when you were a kid, or when did you start realizing you could do all these incredible high-flying flips and all that sort of thing?
Well, next to the wrestling school that was attached, pretty much everything was right there. The auditorium,
yeah,
and to the left of the auditorium was the wrestling school, and to the right was a gymnastics school.
Okay,
so they had the pit with the foams and
yeah.
everything there. Yeah,
that's
so, but I really never was big into like we would go in there and play around, but most of the stuff that I pulled off in the ring was just from being able to sit in the bleachers or being inside the ring and just visualizing stuff.
When you started at 14, what was your name?
My very first name was the Green Lizard. Did you believe that? I got pictures of that too.
What is
and, it? And I remember I was pissed off, Chris, because I told my uncle, you know, I wanted to carry on the legend, which of course it didn't happen right away.
Yeah.
And then he baptized me as the Green Lizard, and of course that only stuck around for like 2 weeks, and then I jumped over to Colibri.
What was it, the Green Lizard, or was it the Green Lizard? What's Spanish for Green Lizard?
Lagartija Verde.
Is that was your name, Lagartija Verde?
Yeah, La Lagartija Verde. Yeah.
La Lagartija Verde. That's awesome.
The name sucked, but at the time I was like, you know what? Just bring it on, man. I just want to wrestle.
Hey, my first match, I was called Cowboy Chris Jericho from Casper, Wyoming. So,
what was the outfit like?
I rebelled. I did not want to be a cowboy. So they're like, all right, we're still going to call you a cowboy, but you don't have to dress like one. So you do what you got to do when you're wrestling, right? Now, in Mexico, I mean, there's a big culture of minis, the little people wrestling, the midget wrestling. When you started, did they want you to be a mini, or were you kind of in the middle ground between mini and you know, I guess, normal-sized person?
Well, I guess they didn't call me a mini. Just because of the fact that I was short, but I was still young. So
until
I had my first break in Mexico, which was when Conan brought me over.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Peña saw me for the first time. He pretty much told Conan, you know what? He doesn't look like a wrestler. He looks like a meanie.
Right.
Put him with the meanies, with the midgets.
Yeah.
And Conan said, no, give him a break. He goes, first put him with the big guys. And if he doesn't do good, then you can go ahead and put him with the meanies. So, and he of course hustled this behind my back, which I didn't know.
Classic Conan, right?
Yeah. So, that was the only time they considered me a meanie.
So, what was the reaction like when you first started with all the other guys in the locker room?
The thing is, before I even became big, just in the Tijuana area.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, I was breathing, sleeping, and eating wrestling. I mean,
right.
I would go to my uncle's shows, and I was being able to hang out with the stars from Mexico that were coming over and spending. You know, I don't know if you remember, but sometimes they would come over to Tijuana, and they would spend sometimes a month and a half,
yeah.
2 months, and the promoter would set them up in apartments. So I was hanging out, you know, with all of them, with Canelo Casas,
mm-hmm.
Heavy Metal,
mm-hmm.
with Leon Chino, you know, and they would just kind of give me tips, you know, if you want to make it big and you want to go to Mexico, you got to eat, and you got to drink beer. You got to drink a lot of beer. that was their pointers for me.
Yeah, to eat and drink beer to gain weight.
Yeah, exactly.
But
and, you know, it's funny because all these guys that were around, that were always real cool with me, you know, never disrespected me or never took me as a joke, because I guess they saw my potential, but I just didn't have the size, you
mm-hmm.
know, and that was one big obstacle in my career.
But do you feel you overcame that with the explosive and the amazing moves that you could do?
Now, I definitely do. To a certain point in my career, it's very satisfying to know that all those years of hearing that I was too small and that I gained weight, I wasn't going to grow any taller. So
yeah.
there was no breaking into that. So, you know, definitely, I mean, it's very satisfying to know that I've accomplished so much and I had really big obstacles in front of me.
Well, and that's the thing that always impressed me about you, even before I met you. Like you said, I met you briefly in Mexico City in 92, I believe it was, maybe early 93. But I was watching you because the first country that really embraced you, besides Mexico, of course, was Japan. And I was spending a lot
Right.
of time in Japan at that time, and they would have literal, like little magazines that were completely devoted and dedicated to you. And they would show your move picture by picture, like a motion, like 1 second, 2 second, 3 second. And I could never, like, there was a couple moves I could not figure out, like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, I don't even know what this is. Like, I couldn't even visualize it in my brain, you know? And that's why I remember the first time I saw you was in Japan at the Super J Cup second stage. And, and Benoit and I were watching you backstage and we were flipping out. I'll never forget, you know, Chris was a pretty quiet, stoic guy, but we were flipping out at like, what the, look at this. What was that? Did you see this? What was that? And it's like, and another, the Psychosis was the perfect partner, perfect guy for you to work with, because he was still to this day one of the guys that knew exactly where to be for all of your moves.
Well, could you imagine? I mean, probably from the time I started training in that gym in Tijuana,
yeah,
he was already training there. So he had been there for about a year by the time I got there. So just training with him every day for the last 5 years, and then eventually starting a professional career with him, you know, next to me. I mean, we were a married couple, man. We took it all the way to WCW.
Yeah, and the thing that was interesting, too, was I remember, and I'm sure you went through this probably at that point in time when you were still kind of, I guess, new, was Asai brought you in, Ultimo Dragon brought you in because he knew you from Mexico and was telling everybody, you got to see this guy, he's incredible. And it wasn't Tenru, but Tenru's brother-in-law, I remember, was yelling at Asai, like, what the, blah, 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 you know, how they yell at each other. And I asked Asai afterwards, what was he yelling about? He said, he's mad at me that I brought Mysterio here, because he says Mysterio is so short that it's almost a joke for this company. Then you had your match and tore the freaking house down. And afterwards, that same guy was asking Asai, when can he come back and how often? Like in 20 minutes.
not to mention, Asai didn't tell you the fact that after his boss bitched him out, he came over to me and said, you make sure you look good because boss is really mad. So he just put the pressure on me. But you know what? It was just hard to have a bad match, you know. And the same thing happened in ECW. You know, after wrestling with Psychosis for so many years and just knowing our styles, it was just so hard to go in that ring and have a bad one, you know.
Well, yeah, you guys had your routine down. You guys knew each other so well. And the thing with the Japanese fans is they embraced you right away, because Japanese are smaller people too. And I think I think that's even kids as well, or anybody. They see you and you become, they live vicariously through you because you're a smaller guy. I think the Japanese fans totally embraced you because of that reason.
You know, I've never thought about that, but that's actually really good, man. And you remember Hayashi too, right?
I was just going to bring him up, yeah. Well, he was the costume maker. He was the guy who made costumes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, crazy story about him. So I get to Japan, you know, everybody's teaching me about the culture and how I got to bring a lot of masks and, you know, they're going to start wanting to buy them and this and that. So I come prepared, but as soon as I get to the arena, and I sold at Sumo Palace,
Yeah, Sumo Palace, right.
Sumo Palace, right, yeah. They pull me over to the side, and they say that this person is looking for me because he has something to give me. Well, it was Hayashi that I met for the first time, and he had an outfit with my measurements to the T.
Wow.
It was actually the outfit that I wore that night, that black and yellow one.
Oh, really? And you'd never been there?
No. I mean, this is the first time we actually met.
Yeah.
I don't know how he got my measurements, but he had them down, man. He said, please wear a costume for tonight. And he goes, I make two masks. You give me one you work, and here's an extra one for you. So that's what I did. I wrestled with that outfit. I gave him the mask that I wore that night, and he had made an extra one for me.
You know, and you brought his name up, and he's the guy that really made that the thought that I told you earlier. Because I remember him saying, Oscar is my hero. Oscar is my hero. Why? Because he is small like me, but yet he is a Superman. And I just thought, like, that's the Japanese mentality, that Rey Mysterio is the Superman that can beat, you know, these giants, but yet he's not the biggest guy. And was so explosive, man. That was such a great match to watch, even to this day.
Thank you, Chris. I mean, that whole era, man, was just incredible, man. I wish I could go back and relive that stage in my life, man. It was awesome.
It was fun. We had some
And you know what? It's funny that after that time, I mean, Hayashi and I are now the biggest of friends, man. We still talk to each other. He comes down to San Diego. He comes to my house. I mean, it's funny how friendship starts, man. But
yeah,
it's incredible.
Now, when we had some good times, because you did quite a few tours. Well, we did quite a few tours in WAR together, and that's when we started working too. We always had a good time in Japan. I always loved the reaction of the crowds there, how they took the sport very seriously. I mean, there's still entertainment value, but they really treated it and still do like an NFL game or an NHL game or something along those lines, you know?
Right. Yeah. Everything was always taken very serious. And I mean, I remember seeing the guys that would, or the wrestlers actually, the boys that would set up the ring, you know, when we would travel on the buses, set up the ring, warm up, wrestle, then tear the ring down, you know, and then go to the next show.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience, especially for that, like you said, that stage in our lives, because we were both just young guys starting out in the business. But
do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Welcome back to Talk is Jericho. We're talking to Rey Mysterio, one of my best friends in the business. It's been a while since we had a chat, but we're enjoying the reminiscing about all the old times in Mexico and Japan. How did you get hooked up with ECW, Oscar?
I believe Conan was in contact with Paulie.
Yeah.
And right about the time that, was it Dean...
Yeah, Dean and Eddie and Chris were there too,
Dean
I think.
Eddie. Yeah. Dean and Eddie were about to leave ECW to go to WCW.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Paulie had told Conan that they were about to leave. And I don't know if Conan brought it up or Paulie asked him if he had anybody out there that he can replace Eddie and Dean, which, of course, we were no replacements. We just had something different to give him, you know. And that's when he brought Psychosis and me in.
And at this point, too, you guys had a reputation. I mean, it wasn't as much of a hard sell for you to go to ECW, I'm sure, because they knew all of the best wrestlers in the world. And all of us, when we went there, we had some buzz about us. And the fans were smart, too. They were tape traders and they were magazine readers. And what was it like when you first went there with the fans? Did they embrace you right away as well?
Man, it was a big embracement by the fans. I think the cool thing about going to ECW for the first time, and it was just like going to Japan for the first time. I mean, we were psyched up because I think at the time we weren't realizing that we were just taking another step further of making it big leagues. We were enjoying every moment that we had to wrestle somewhere else. It was just something different for us. So I remember watching tapes of ECW before we actually got there, and we were like, damn, this is crazy. We're about to go over there, tear it up. And man, Psychosis and I, we were living together at the time, so it was just excitement. And once we flew in Philly Airport, they picked us up. I remember walking into that travel lodge. You remember that?
Yeah.
As soon as we pulled up to the hotel, we hear sirens and she's going down in the lobby, and Kathy was with us, and next thing you know, they're bringing New Jack down the stairs. I don't know what had happened. We're like, oh man, what are we about to get into, man?
Yeah, the travel lodge was right downtown in the middle of like I'm going to say a crack neighborhood, and all the fans would hang out there at the travel lodge. I'm sure some of them are listening right now, and all the boys and all the, I remember, I'll never forget the first time I went there, how many girls were working for the company. I'd never seen that many hot chicks working as valets or managers. So all the girls, all the guys, all the fans, and there was cops and there was drugs, and it was just nuts.
It was ECW home, man. It was crazy. It was really crazy. But anyways, walking into that arena, man, for the first time, we felt kind of, timid or or a bit, you know, kind of out of place.
Yeah, intimidated, but, man, maybe.
Yeah, all it took was to go out there and perform for the first time, and then you just felt like you were, you had been there for years, man. And the reason of us being out there and being able to do what we did that night, our very first show in ECW, I remember going up to Pauly and asked him, is it okay if we use a table? He's like, use whatever you want. Go out there and have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, he was really adamant about us being confident and just tearing the house down. And that's what we did, man. After that, it was every week we were there now, you know, after our first appearance there.
Yeah, and there was no rules in ECW, and that was, like you said, that was one of the greatest things about that company. You could do anything you want. I remember when Hoovy came in with you, and you guys you did the Hurricanrana off the parking of the car in the parking lot. You guys went outside.
Yeah.
I mean, just stuff like that,
yeah.
And people would just be following you outside and screaming and yelling and ECW this, and there was just no limits.
What a vibe, huh?
Yeah.
What a freaking vibe, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, it really was. It's hard to explain for people who weren't there just how that was. It was a real us versus them mentality to be in that locker room.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true, man. That's very true. But it, man, again, these are phases in my life, man. That I hardly get a chance to talk about them, and in this occasion, it just brings back a lot of good memories.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, because our careers are very parallel. Like I said, man, I met you my first week in Mexico, which was my first major company, and we've kind of followed each other ever since. And it is fun to talk about those days, because there's not a lot of guys that know what it was like, you know. And that's, I think, a lot of our fans listening maybe heard about it, but don't really know for sure, you know, just how things went. And I was going to mention to you, mentioned Hayashi making the masks for you. How did you decide the design of your mask? Is that the same mask that your uncle wore?
It's pretty much one of the many designs that my uncle wore. He would pretty much come up with different designs almost every other week, every month. But he always kept certain things that would signify his name,
yeah,
which was a question mark,
uh-huh,
a crown, and then, of course, after I started wearing the Falcons, you know, they just kind of stuck with me. But, yeah, this was one of the many masks that my uncle wore, and I just embraced this one for some reason, man. It just felt like this was the one to carry with me.
Yeah, and the question mark would be for mystery, and the crown, because Ray is not Ray like, you know, Ray Liotta. It's Ray as in king. Ray is Spanish for king. So that's king, the mystery king, or king mystery is what it would mean in English.
Yeah, king.
Yeah.
Yeah, king mystery. Exactly, huh?
So when you were working in ECW, were you still working in Mexico and Japan as well?
Yeah, I was actually doing all three, going back and forth. Not until I started with WCW is when I decided to move back to San Diego, and then that's when I started my life with my wife and my kids. But at the time when I was doing Japan and ECW, I was still living in Mexico City.
And did Conan help you get into WCW as well? It seemed like he was always kind of going into the company first and then bringing you along with him.
He always, if there's something I gotta pay respects to and thank him for, is definitely opening up the doors for me to not just for me. I mean, he did it for a lot of guys, and I'm sure he didn't have to, but he did, man. He brought us along, you know. Psychosis. It was always we were the testers, Psychosis and Ray, you know. And after we would make an entrance, then he would pull other guys in. In this case, Hoovy and Parka, Super Kello.
Yeah, the whole yeah, gang. I mean, and then,
yeah,
you know, I came into WCW a couple months after you got there. Now, you know, we're talking about going into the locker room in Japan, the locker room in ECW. What was the reaction to you in WCW when you came in there? Because this is now guys that pay no attention to international wrestling, could care less about what's happening in Mexico or Japan, could care less what's happening in ECW or, you know, any of those type of places. You know, guys like Luger and Sting and Hogan and Hall and Nash. And did they have an open mind when you came in, or was it once again kind of one of those things where they were kind of snickering at you or not really believing what you could do until they saw you?
Oh, it was definitely, there was a lot of snickering.
So tell us about the first day you walk in the locker room. Who did you see? Like, who was laughing at you?
Well, here's the crazy thing, man. I didn't realize until I was there at the time. But my first match with WCW was a pay-per-view. I mean, they didn't even bring me in for a tryout or, you know, like we normally do now for WWE.
Yeah.
They just threw in the card, and I believe I was opening match for a Great American Bash against Dean Malenko. So I was like, all right. But as soon as I walked into the locker room, you know, Lex was there. Hogan came in later. But of course, Lex, when he first saw me, you know, like, it was kind of one of those stare downs, like, what's this kid doing in this locker room, man? the one guy that has always been cool up to date, Scott Steiner.
And, really?
Yeah, I was able to meet him in ECW. So when I walked into WCW for the first time, he was there, man. He was really cool.
Well, he might have seen you, though, because Scott had spent a lot of time in Japan, too. And like I said, if you worked in Japan in the mid-90s, you knew who Rey Mysterio was. And if you looked through any magazine, you would see that. So maybe that's why. Maybe he kind of had heard about you and knew kind of what you could do.
I hope so, man, because even to the day now, I've always said that one of my superstar heroes growing up was Scott Steiner, you know, just being such a big dude. And I don't know if you remember him pulling off those Frankensteins.
Yeah.
Man, it was just awesome. I would just love to see him do that move over and over. And believe it or not, man, that's where one of my creations came from seeing him pull off the Steiner.
Yeah.
You know, and me being able to be a smaller guy, but just to execute it from any side of the ring.
Yeah, jumping off the second rope or going into the top. I mean, how did you think of those moves? Did you just sit down and sit in a ring and just kind of look at the ropes and think, well, maybe I could do this or do that, or did they come to you in a dream, or how did it work?
Just like the first time, way you described it. Mm-hmm. I would sit by the rope, by the ring, and just visualize. Can I pull it off from here? Can I do it from the corner? And you know, just... Once you get your mind going, it just starts coming to you, man. And being as young as I was, man, I had no fear of anything. It's crazy. Now, no way. It would be hard for me to pull something off. But going back to that story, Chris, of walking into the locker room in WCW for the first time,
yeah.
I have to say this. There was a lot of stare downs. It's hard for me to remember exactly who was there, but like you mentioned, it was all the big boys, you know.
Right.
We were in Baltimore Arena,
mm-hmm.
and I remember going out there with Dean, tearing the house down, coming back, and when we walked back into the locker room, everybody stood up and started applauding.
Wow.
Hogan was there, Jimmy Hart, you know. And it just felt really good to walk into that company for the first time, have your first match, have a pay-per-view match, not even get a tryout.
Right.
Walking, getting stared down before you go out to the ring, and then you walk back into the locker room after your match, and everybody just stands up and gives you a standing ovation, man. Felt really cool.
You were used to that, though. I mean, it seemed like at this point you were probably walking into the dressing room and seeing some people smirk and just going, all right, just wait, because it wasn't the first time that it happened to you.
I wasn't used to the second part, though. Getting up and like saying good job, good
right?
Job, that really felt satisfying
for you. One of the best matches I'd ever seen that you had in WCW or at any point that anybody's had was Halloween Havoc. I believe it was '97 with Eddie Guerrero, and he was another opponent that knew exactly where to be and what to do with you in the ring.
Right, man. We had a chance to wrestle against each other for a good couple in Mexico before he came to WCW.
Oh, in AAA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in AAA, exactly. So by the time he left AAA, I was already working main events in AAA.
Yeah.
Which gave me the opportunity to work against him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really fun. By the time we were in WCW together, it was like we knew each other for a very long time.
Yeah, you guys had great chemistry, and then and the crowd was so into that match. Do you remember it? Is it one of the ones that stands out to you?
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. Because I remember Eric, he had me going there for a while, saying that that was apparently the night that I was supposed to lose my mask.
Oh, it was a mask. It was a hair versus mask, or was it just?
It was mask versus title.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So apparently that's where that whole idea started of me taking off my mask.
Yeah, he went through.
It came down.
He went through a real phase where he wanted everyone to lose their masks, and there was a lot of Mexican guys in the locker room at that point. Like you said, there was probably 10 or 15 guys. What was his mindset for that? Did he ever try and explain it to you?
No, never. But I think now it's even harder to try to find out what the whole purpose of it was, or who was behind it, if there was somebody, or if it was just him, saying, you know, that's what I want to do, and that's what I want to do. I just want to take your masks off, knowing that possibly it could jeopardize some of the careers in Mexico if, God forbid, WCW were to close down at the time.
Right. Well, then a couple of years later, he actually did have you lose your mask.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, that did happen. Reason why? God, apparently at the time, he thought I had more potential without my mask.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they never marketed my mask like WWE did as soon as I started with them.
Right.
You know, that was a dollar sign here, and it wasn't in WCW, and I never could understand why.
Yeah, I mean, he just got it into his head. I mean, I had a match with Juventud Guerrera where it was mask versus title, and I beat him for his mask, and he took it off.
That's
and
right.
You know, at one point in that time, you know, the late 90s, I felt that he was not as good as you, but pretty damn close. He was a tremendous, tremendous performer.
Oh my God, he was incredible, incredible.
Yeah.
And it's sad to hear that he was such a mess up on other situations, you know. But he was just so talented, man. I mean, there's no reason why he shouldn't be next to me right now.
I agree. Just for whatever reason, like you said, his antics outside of the ring were always got him in so much trouble. But inside the ring, I had so many great matches with him. He was one of my favorites to work with when I was in WCW, for sure.
Yeah, me too. I mean, after Psicosis, I think one of the biggest rivalries I had, besides, of course, the ones that came down later in my career, but in Mexico, it was with Hoovy, man. And, man, we had some awesome matches, some title matches. I mean, we were going off every night. And we were pretty much built about the same, you know.
Yeah.
He was a bit taller than me,
mm-hmm.
but he was such a good base and such a good worker that he was like Eddie in a way, you know, knew where to position himself for everything and just made you look good, man.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And made himself look good.
Yeah, no, like you said, he was a good seller, he had good instincts, and he was always fun to watch and fun to work with. You also worked a few times with Hall and Nash, which was quite, you know, that was a little bit of a size difference there. But those guys always really liked you. I remember they gave you the nickname Ray Ray. They were really always really good to you, which was rare because they weren't good to everybody back in those days.
Yeah, it's funny, man, because you mentioning that, Chris. You know, when we did that whole WCW videos for WWE, they had asked me about Hall and Nash, and I said, man, they were cool with me from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, that second pay-per-view that I had, which was the Great American Bash. Remember, we were coming from Mexico, so, you know, renting cars and was a big problem for us at the beginning. But one of the first persons that stood out and just pretty much offered a hand was Nash. Right after that pay-per-view, he said, hey, you guys have a ride for Nitro the next day? Like, nah. He goes, I'll pick you guys up. Where you guys staying at? And he picked Conan up and myself up the following day, drove us down to Nitro, man, which we were doing in Orlando at the time, Universal.
Yeah.
But again, man, they were always very, very cool. At one point, I remember when Conan wasn't around or none of the boys, Hall, Nash, and myself would be driving down the road. So
they respected you because of, you know, the reasons that we're talking about. You know, you were a smaller guy that came in there and just impressed everybody. You've always been a really respectful guy. And I think they probably, I remember that one time when they did the backstage invasion and Nash like threw you like a dart into the side of the truck. Do you remember that? It was just, he flew head first into it and just went boom. I mean, that made him look like a monster. You made him look great that night. I still remember it.
It was actually that day that I got the ride. Maybe it was in exchange for the ride, man.
Yeah.
Now it's starting to hit me.
That's right. There's always a price to pay.
Yeah, man.
We'll be back with more Rey Mysterio next week on Talk is Jericho. We've got way too much left to discuss. How he ended up in the WWE, what his first days there were like, and even about the program, the classic angle that Mysterio and Jericho worked together. Lots more with Rey Mysterio next Wednesday, but right now it's time to go to the phone lines. Did you catch the number? Were you watching the Twitter? At Talk is Jericho. If you were smart and stealth, you might have gotten through. We got tons of calls right here, but let's go to Eric in Minnesota. And see what's going on up in that neck of the woods. How you doing, Eric?
Hey, Chris. Nice talking to you again. I know a couple of shows ago you mentioned that you and your family vacation up in Lake Vermilion.
Yes.
I was wondering if you have any fun stories about traveling up in northern Minnesota or from your vacation times with your family or any other times like on the road.
Well, I mean, yeah, Lake Vermilion is a really cool place. I mean, northern Minnesota, there's tons of lakes up there, but we have a really cool one that's massive. Have a cabin up there. My wife's family has had a cabin up there for years and years and years, and it's a great place to go. I went there every summer since we met back in about 98 or 99, and actually that's where I first saw the vignette countdown to the Jericho countdown back in 1999 when we were doing the Millennium Man thing. And I remember I was at the lake, and this is, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more reception now and Wi-Fi and just overall cell signal and everything. But at the time, there really wasn't a lot of cell signal. So there was two things I remember. One is that I would have to, back then you would have to call WCW to find out if you were working. And they would leave a message on their machine. And this is who's working this week. And they'd read a whole list of people, you know, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Sting, Lex Luger. And they would read your name if you were on Raw. And I had already been kind of ostracized and kicked out of WCW, but I still had to check in to make sure that I wasn't needed to be on the show. So they couldn't, you know, sue me for breach of contract or whatever it was. So I remember I had to go down to the end of the dock and kind of lean over the edge with my cell phone to try and get enough service to hear, like, if I was on the show, knowing that I wasn't, but just making sure. And it would take forever because it would cut out and I'd have to start again. And this stupid answer machine message was like 5 minutes long with all the names that they would list. And of course, I had to make sure that it didn't get to mine. And then I had to go and make sure that the vignettes were starting for my WWE debut. And I was really nervous because, you know, in wrestling, you never believe anything until it actually happens. So I remember sitting in the cabin and it was raining outside. And they had satellite TV, and I was just praying that it wouldn't go out and waiting and waiting. And I had to sit there for 2 hours and watch the whole show until finally in the last 10 minutes of Raw, they showed the first Millennium Man countdown. And I was so excited. I remember it was like in this little cabin with the whole woods and the forest around me. And that's when I knew for sure that I was going to the WWE.
I was also wondering, I know like Cook and Tower, a bunch of small towns are up in that area. I was wondering if you have any cool stories about hanging out and talking to the people up there.
Not really, because I don't really spend a lot of time up in that area. I just know that you kind of just go there for groceries and for Grey Goose vodka. So that's why I like Tower, is that they have Grey Goose there when you're out in the woods. You can always go find your Grey Goose over in Tower 8. All right, we got Mike from Virginia is here. How you doing, Mike?
Good to talk to you again, Chris. I'm doing great.
All right. What's your question, buddy?
Okay. In one of your books, I'm sorry, I don't remember which one, you talked about meeting Carlton from Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
Do you have any other kind of awkward meetings with sitcom people from throughout your career?
Well, I mean, I mentioned when I did Celebrity Duets back in 2005 or 2006, Carlton, it was on there. His name was Alfonso Ribera.
Right.
And if you remember, you know, on the show on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Carlton would do, you know, the dance. He was kind of the nerdy guy. And he was on this show with me, and we had gone through the show. The show was kind of a train wreck anyways. I mean, it was all right, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the last night, we had to do Rock Around the Clock, and it was kind of like all the people that were on the show each sang a line. So we were standing backstage, and Alfonso came up to me, and he goes, "Hey." I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Do you like sex?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I guess. Like, pretty much everyone does, right?" He goes, "I love sex. I love having sex." And I'm like, "Okay." And he's like, "I must have banged over 1,000 women." And I'm looking at him, he's like, he's kind of short, little, pudgy, fat dude. I'm like, "All right, you've been banging 1,000 chicks." And meanwhile, I'm begging, "Please let them call me for my line. Like, please let me call me for my line." So finally they call me, and I'm like, "I'll see you in a bit." But yeah, there's nothing creepier than having Carlton ask you if you like, "Do you like sex? Do you like sex?"
Thank you so much, dude.
All right, man. Thank you. We'll do one more call. Let's get to Adam in Massachusetts.
What's up, Chris? It's your number one fan from Massachusetts.
All right. What's going on, dude?
I wanted to talk to you about finishing moves. Going back in your WCW days, you had the Lion Tamer, which still to this day, the best submission hold in wrestling, I believe.
Oh, thank you.
And then when you jumped over to the WWF, or WWE, I should say, you kind of started incorporating that little double powerbomb thing you were doing. Was that your decision, or was that a WWE decision?
I don't think I did the double powerbomb very many times, and they probably didn't want me to do it because it's a very power move that somebody see Batista or something do. Like, you know, as I came into the business through Japan and Mexico and Germany, I was one of the bigger guys on the roster, especially against the guys I was working with. So when I came to WWE, I still did a lot of those moves, but they really didn't fit anymore because I was a smaller guy. And I know that's one of the reasons why we started using, why Vince didn't want me to use the submission, because he thought I'd be explosive, like the type of guy that would use a pin. But I never really had a good pinning move. Like, the Lion Salt was great, but it was okay. But that's why I came up with the Codebreaker back in 2007, was I knew I needed something new. I knew I needed a new move to be able to bust out. Actually, maybe in 2012 when I brought the Codebreaker. I don't remember when it was. You guys probably know better than I do. But I needed something more explosive, and that's why I came up with it, because I knew that the Lion Salt wasn't really good enough to be a good finishing move. And the submission is great, but sometimes guys don't want to submit when you're losing a match. Sometimes you need something quick, or sometimes, you know, submitting is kind of like the ultimate sin. You just don't submit, and if you do, it's kind of a detrimental thing. So that's why I came up with the idea of having two and sometimes even three different holds, and I always tried to pass that on to all the guys that I worked with. And you always need to have another hold, another finishing move as a backup in case the one that you always use just doesn't fit.
Absolutely. Now let me ask you this. Was there any moves that you really wanted to do that, say, someone else already did? I know it's kind of like taboo to have the same finisher as someone else. So was there ever a finisher that you were like, "Man, I hope this guy either takes off or changes his gimmick or something so I can use this finisher"? And then also, what, in your opinion, is the best finisher ever in other than the Lion Tamer, of course?
Well, I mean, there's never any moves that I wanted to steal. I mean, there's moves I wish I would have thought of. I mean, the RKO is great. The Diamond Cutter is great. They're both the same thing. The Stone Cold Stunner was awesome. The Rock Bottom. Anything you could do just out of nowhere. Super sweet chin music. Like, anything you could just hit out of anywhere were always the best ones, you know? And that's why, I mean, I needed something like that, which is why I came up with the Codebreaker. Something you could just hit no matter what was going on. You wouldn't have to set it up. You don't have to do anything else for that. I always loved the Shooting Star Press, just the majestic move of it, which is why I broke my arm back in 94 trying to do it. I mean, it's not for everybody. Powerbomb, a good powerbomb just looks like it kills you. I always thought that was a great finishing move as well. So there's always, you know, a lot of them that would stand out and, you know, that I would take all the time. AA is a great move. I don't like taking it for some reason. I never did. Probably the worst finishing move I ever took was when Cena held me up on his shoulders for the AA, and Orton came over and gave me the RKO from it, which there's no way you can land other than straight down on your head, right on your neck. And I don't know why I didn't think of that, but it almost killed me. You could probably find that one on YouTube as well. So Lots of moves that you take, and not all of them are show business, baby. There's a lot of moves that actually hurt, and you got to be careful. Do not try this at home. Thanks to everybody who joined me today for the calls, and thanks so much to linking to Amazon through the Talk is Jericho page at podcastone.com. Whenever you do your online shopping, every time you buy something that way, Amazon kicks back a few dollars to the show so I can keep bringing you the Pot of Thunder twice a week for free. Okay? You know, today I had a stuffy nose, used a Kleenex. That cost money. People! And thanks for hitting that download button. In fact, if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend to check out the show and tell them to tell a couple of friends and so on and so on and so on. I know there's a lot of choices for podcasts nowadays. Obviously, mine is the best. Obviously, you're smart enough to know that. But if you really like the show and you haven't done it yet, hit that subscribe button at iTunes so you never miss an episode. It'll go straight to your device. For free and on time. So we will see you next Wednesday for part two of my awesome interview with Rey Mysterio. We'll look forward to checking you out then. Stay hard, stay hungry, stay heavy. Thank you very much, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.